Hi, my name is Randall Graham from Bonnie Doon Vineyard. My name is spelled G-R-A-H-M, as in Mary, and my blog post you can find at bindoonsolong.com.
Welcome to Wine and Dine. My name is Lynn Creelo Chamberlain, host. You're listening to iWine Radio. The time is right for us to ourselves as consumers and as listeners here to carpe dunum. Today, our guest on Wine and Dine is Randall Graham. Always transparent, always authentic, always seeking an expression of place. He is obviously the infamous winemaker for life of Bonnie Doon Vineyards, and we'd like to thank him so very much for his time this week on Wine and Dine. I'm curious as to what you studied in high school and in college, because you're so fascinated with language, and French in particular, English and Latin. Were you studying romantic languages or something in college, Randall?
I studied virtually everything in college, it seems. I had a very eclectic education. Never actually did master Latin, but I do fake it pretty well.
And when did you, the spark of a love affair with the French language and really everything French develop? Were you studying French in high school or junior high school?
I didn't learn French till college, and maybe it was even like the second time I went to college. I studied German in college,
oh, wow,
of all things. But I think the love of my Francophilia certainly has Venice roots, and then spending some time in France, I ended up importing wine from France for a number of years, so I spent a lot of time over there. And then, of course, got the whole French car bug, and I've been an avid Citroën lover for the last 25 or so years. Yeah.
How are those on gas mileage?
Not so good, although I have a diesel. It's got other problems. It's got a lot of other issues, but the diesel has great mileage, just doesn't work at all in any other respect.
And can you find a good mechanic to work on the Citroën where you're at?
Well, as it turns out, that's the sine qua non for Citroën ownership. If you don't have a genius mechanic nearby on call 24 hours a day, Citroën ownership is just not possible in North America. But luckily I do in Santa Cruz, which is a very lucky thing.
Oh, yeah, you are very, very lucky. This is almost reminding me of a Jerry Seinfeld episode with the guy taking away his, I think he was driving an Audi. But anyway, I don't remember the car. But that's so funny. So in college, were you a philosophy major?
My life, by the way, is a Seinfeld episode in many... When I bought the Citroën, this is very Seinfeldian. When I bought the Citroën in the first place, the guy I bought it from, the former mechanic who used to work on the cars, essentially made me promise to be a good Citroën owner. He would not sell the car to just any person. I had to demonstrate my worthiness of Citroën ownership. I had a promise to look under the car every morning before I took off to make sure there wasn't hydraulic fluid leak. So that's one of the prerequisites of Citroën ownership.
Oh, that's so funny. So he wasn't worried about a cat going up underneath the car or something to stay warm overnight. It was the leak. Oh boy.
Well, no, he's just worried that you're going to drive the car without adequate fluid.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I totally understand. Now, oh gosh, there's so many things I want to talk to you about and ask you about. So I think I may be somewhat flip-flopping around.
Sure.
So, okay, let me ask you this first. And I'm asking you this as a lot of what I'm asking you is actually, I ask myself the same thing. And it occurs to me that where you're at in your life is in some ways where I'm at in my life. We're not too far different in our ages. But when I say to you verbosity, what's your take on that?
And your point is? I mean, I don't know. I mean, verbosity, I'm prone to verbosity, and I think it's just something I don't have to live with. It, you know, everyone has their tragic flaws, and verbosity is one of mine, but I'm sort of over it. And,
but why do you, because I've been accused of that also. And so why do we do it? You know, why
I think we want to be understood. We feel tragically misunderstood, and we're always clarifying and embellishing and polishing and revising. That's why I love footnotes so much, because after you made your sentence, you can qualify it in six different ways. And, really make your point.
I really think that with your use of the footnotes that you really need somebody has to award you an honorary PhD for all the writing that you do, and for all that you're just a serious thinker. Okay, what is your thought on the use of sarcasm as a means for communicating?
You know, it's like any weapon. You've got to know how to use your weapon. It can be used for good or for evil. And I don't know. I think if you use sarcasm with a pure heart, I think you're okay. But you have to understand that you can wound people, too, with sarcasm. So I think it's a weapon that should maybe the weapon of last resort.
You have to know who you're targeting.
Correct.
I mean,
you can be misunderstood.
Exactly.
Seriously.
Exactly.
Okay. By the way, on the web, you can easily be misunderstood just saying any simple proposition, you're misunderstood.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and that's one of the reasons why I love interviewing people so much. Radio is because people can glean so much out of an intention of what is said by the inflection and the sound of the voice, and you don't get that one layer with the printed word.
Sure. Indeed.
Okay, how about love? And love applies to anything and everything you want it to apply to.
Oh, dear. That's a tough one. You know, I was really shocked when I read an interview with one of Frank Zappa's family members. I don't know whether it was his wife or his son or daughter, but it was something like they said, you know, Frank doesn't do love. And, you know, he does a lot of other things really well. He just doesn't do love very well. And I think that's problematic. I mean, it is something that you want to do in your life if you can. And I worry about my own self-centeredness and narcissism, and I certainly could probably be a better lover if I...
But you do... I knew you were going to go in that direction. And so... I want you to think in terms of not just yourself, but your love for wine, your love for food, your love for being, for connecting with other people in the way that your chosen language is with wine. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, everything we do in life is sort of a form of love. I mean, everything we do is a kind of love or transformation of love, and obviously, as Dr. Freud points out, nothing we do has a single factor, a single explanatory mechanism. We do things for many, many different reasons, for noble reasons, for base reasons. I don't know. I think you just sort of have to try to include some noble reasons in what you do, or noble wish for noble outcomes. I mean, I just trying in my own work to. I know, obviously, I'm seeking fame and glory and immortality, but if I can also do some good along the way, that would be a beautiful thing. So that's an act of love on some level, I'm sure.
Were you an only child?
No, actually the oldest of three.
Me too. So were you your mother and father's favorite?
Mother's favorite. I don't know about dad. I think I had my issues with my dad, but certainly my mother. I was born on the same birthday as my mother, which is
wow.
Kind of odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were her birthday present.
I was her birthday present, for good or for bad.
Were you born in California?
Yeah. Yeah, in Los Angeles.
Were your parents, did they drink wine at all at the dinner table during the week or weekends?
Hardly ever.
Yeah.
Hardly ever. Wine was not their thing.
Were they a scotch and soda sort of people?
No, they were not alcoholic. They were not alcoholic beverage people at all.
So then,
my mother actually sold my wine, ended up selling my wine in Los Angeles for a number of years, and did exceptionally well. But the irony, of course, is she couldn't open a bottle, so she needed help opening a bottle, and she couldn't tell if the wine was any good or not. So she, you know, it was the account would have to point out to her that I'm sorry, Ruthie, this the bottle's been spoiled for 5 days. You may want to open another one.
Oh, what a riot!
But she was fiendishly effective. It was incredible.
And she believed in you and what you were, what and
completely
the, yes
and religiously
the trust yes. Wow, yep. That is so, well. It's kind of also a function of the time. I mean, my parents didn't really drink when I was growing up. Also, are your parents still alive now?
Mom is still alive. Yeah, she just celebrated her 90th birthday.
Oh, that's so wonderful! And does she enjoy a glass of wine at all now in her life?
Every so often, I think. If I'm around, she'll have some wine. I don't think she really drinks much when I'm not around.
Yeah. Well, this has been wonderful hearing about that. It's always fun to hear people's familial stories because it tells a little bit about us in the background. We're going to be going to a break here very shortly. And when we come back, I'd like to ask you to start. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a heads up here about the word, about memory and distraction. I loved what you said on your blog, and we will have a link up for people listening. If you're dying to switch gears while you're listening to this and go to Randall Graham's blog, if you type in just Randall Graham blog, you'll get right to it. So Randall, we'll be right back, okay?
Great.
His most recent blog posting is very, very insightful, intuitive. You'll learn a lot about him. He's got something new coming up that we're going to be talking about as well. And I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. Pope Ludum in San Benito County. You're listening to Wine and Dine. We'll be right back.
I'm Dr. Barry C. Smith. I'm the editor and contributor to Questions of Taste, The Philosophy of Wine, a new volume of essays edited by Oxford University Press. If you're a drinker and you pay attention to wine with a certain pleasure and fascination, this book will challenge you, incite you, maybe irritate you, but I'm keen to know what you think. Wine is definitely something too important for us not to reflect on it.
My name's Randall Graham, winemaker and president for life of Bonnie Doon Vineyard. Check us out on the web at bonniedoonvineyard.com. and enjoy an extraterrestrial glass of Cigar Volant while listening to the Wine and Dine radio show with Lynn Crelo Chamberlain.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. Welcome to Wine and Dine. We are continuing our conversation with Randall Graham, and we are going to... I love this. I've never done this with anybody else, to tell you the truth, Randall. You're just the perfect candidate for this, to be just kind of, because you just love the English language, give you a word and let you take off here. And in your blog post, that's the most recent post up right now, you talk about memory, and I am accused of this all the time also, so I so relate to what you're saying about it. It's like there are certain things that you don't remember, and other things in life are distractions. You know what happens with me is I don't necessarily remember the details of things, but I remember how I felt.
Sure. That's pretty typical, I'm told.
Well, but it drives me nuts that I don't remember details.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yes, I'm going through that phase right now where I feel my memory is real. I'm really losing it, which is a little distressing, but... We'll cope with this. Maybe more exercise or better blood flow is needed, I think.
But, you know, like to work on a restaurant floor and have the command of, you know, you're a sommelier and you have the command of how something tasted, you know, at this exact time and the progression of things and even the way things are named. A long time ago, I let go of those kind of details because I thought that I really kind of decided they were kind of silly details to remember, but I'm amazed at the people who hang on to all that kind of detail in their brain.
They're just wired differently. They have very special brains. I mean, I'm sure they've got other problems, but their brains are, their nervous system is wired differently, that's for sure.
Oh, well, it's like being so fixated on the teeny-weeny detail. But in fact, you are obsessed, and rightfully so. Well, I'm going the direction of the details of what grape variety you have in exactly what place and on what rootstock and the soil profiles and all that kind of stuff. Talk to us about this project you've been working on for a while in San Juan Bautista.
Yes. Well, in fact, I'm not a detail person. I'm a great generalist and a synthesist. I'm not a detail person. So this is really this project in San Juan Bautista at our farm, which we call Popola Shum, is really, in a sense, my spiritual practice, and it's an attempt to be aware, alert, more present, more observant, and more grounded, just looking at things and learning how to see things for the first time. So I am a Luftmensch. My head is in the clouds. I see what I want to see. I have fantasies. I'm in a dream world. I'm Don Quixote. So this is really my enforced practice to learn how to live on the earth if I can. And so the project itself is learning, or is perhaps it's an exploration of terroir and the idea that a wine can somehow express a sense of place, and it's a discovery of that sense of place. And it's a way, I've got a fairly unorthodox methodology to go about this, and it's either a really great idea or a really bad idea, and I don't yet know which it's going to be.
Well, I'm fascinated that you're going the direction of using Vitis Berlandieri.
Well, the Vitis Berlandieri is not, I'm certainly not going to hybridize Berlandieri into the vines themselves.
That's, you're using
the
Berlandieri as rootstock.
It's going to be rootstock.
Yes,
correct.
Yes. But, I mean, it's, I think, and from seed, I mean, what I was reading, you've got these wild seedlings from Texas Hill Country. Did you come up with that idea yourself, or did you do a lot of research and came up with that conclusion as that's the way you wanted to go?
Yeah, well, this is, you know, a different segment of the work. So this was an idea. I'm fascinated by the idea of plants grown from seeds because they behave very differently than plants grown from cuttings or rootings. They have a different rooting habit. They tend to root. They exhibit what's called geotropism, or the ability to root straight down. So theoretically, the Berlandieri seedlings, which came from wild Berlandieri grapes, should make perfectly good rootstock. And the reason the Berlandieri is interesting is that it's a extremely drought-resistant grape variety, native grape from Texas.
Okay.
Every plant is going to be a little different, but I think they'll all have the characteristics that I'm looking for in drought tolerance and phylloxera resistance and so forth.
And stay with the same cultivars that you've always been so fascinated with?
Well, no, not at all. It's time for something new and different.
Okay, so what are you going to do?
So in other words, I'm doing two things in San Juan, at least, well, probably more than two, but two major things. One, I've identified, with the help of Claude and Lydia Bourguignon, who are geologists to the stars.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, they're very cool people. They are the world's terroir experts. They help vineyards throughout the world, mostly in France, but throughout the world, really work on identifying their terroirs, understanding their terroirs, and amplifying, if you will, the terroir, doing practices that will really lead to its accentuation, with the idea that the terroir is the most valuable asset that a domain might have. So they helped me identify some unique soil types. We dug a lot of pits and characterized the soil types, and we found some really interesting soils, and we're going to try to keep those delimited, if you will.
Yeah.
So those will be kind of a separate terroir. And then some other soils that are good, but maybe not as distinctive or interesting. And on those soils, we're going to grow varietal grapes. Mind you, not normal varietal grapes, things like Sagrantino and Rouquet and Ribolla Gialla and things like that.
Okay.
But those are going to be varietal wines. And on the distinctive terroirs, we're going to hope to grow a mixed plantation. So in other words, a genetically very diverse
field
selection
blend
of grapes. A field blend.
Yeah.
But these are going to be a field blend of new grape varieties that we've created by crossing one vinifera with another. And I haven't really decided whether it's going to be more than two vinifera or having multiple parents, but the whole idea is to essentially create a lot of genetic diversity. And the way you do that is through breeding and then collection of the seeds and rooting of the seeds.
And is the vineyard going to be managed biodynamically? Is that the aim for bumping up the expression of terroir?
Biodynamics is a very powerful methodology for enhancing terroir, but there are other technologies as well that are quite interesting, and among them is the use of biochar, which I'm really keen on.
Biochar,
and
what's that?
Biochar is essentially activated charcoal, which is mixed with compost.
Oh, wow.
And it has these really interesting agronomic properties, but not the least of which is the strong encouragement or strong favoring of the formation of the mycorrhizae, or the
microorganisms in the soil.
In the roots of the plant.
Nitrogen fixing.
Well, not necessarily nitrogen fixing. Actually, they actively transport micronutrients into the soil.
Oh, wow.
Things like magnesium and calcium and that sort of thing. So you can think of them as terroir amplifiers.
Oh, my gosh. I need to learn about that. I've never heard anybody talk about that. You have got to live at least as long as your mother is on this planet.
Correct.
And so what is your long-term goal? I mean, these are all ideas that are long-term goals.
Correct. Yeah. My long-term goal is to create 10,000 new grape varieties, to live long enough to see some of them produce wine. And ultimately, I have several goals. I mean, one is to achieve a wine with a distinctive sense of place. The other thing is, you know, just having the patrimony of all this new germplasm, and perhaps in all this new germplasm, there will be a new brilliant grape variety that emerges. Maybe one of these grapes will be the next Pinot Noir or Nebbiolo or Syrah, and maybe one of these grapes will have excellent disease resistance or drought tolerance or heat tolerance, and maybe will be a very appropriate selection for the 21st century.
And in fact, this is where you will gain your immortality.
Possibly. I love the idea of just at some point I might try to raise some money for this project. That might be helpful. Maybe I'll sell names of grapes. You can, for X amount of dollars, you can have a grape named after you.
Oh, gosh. You know what? I have failed to even mention, because I've been having so much fun with you, that I've tasted that sparkling Syrah, which was glorious. Mousse was so pink and frothy, and the cider that you have. And, you know, I kind of took it for granted, and so people listening, I want you to understand that everything that Randall Graham makes is stupendous.
Oh, thank you.
And we would like to thank you so very much for your time.
My pleasure.
This has just been a joy. And we will have links up for you to read this blog post that I was studying so intently to prepare for this interview. More than anything, I mean, he's omnipresent, Randall Graham, as long as I've been in the wine business. We will have links up for you to order his wines. Just about anything that you can imagine, he has. You're listening to Wine and Dine. You're listening to iWine Radio.